What's going on, Clipper Nation? It's your two favorite Four Eyes.
I like that.
Coming at you with a special edition Twitter Live for our Wednesday show.
Yeah.
So that's at Locked On Clips. Yeah, check us out. We're going to be going live at 1:45 p.m. Pacific every day this week.
Mm-hmm.
And today is no exception. We got a heck of a show lined up for you.
Absolutely.
We're going to kick things off with a preview of tonight's action against the Jazz.
Thick one tonight,
yeah,
I would say.
I think we're both on edge about this one.
Yeah.
This would be a really huge statement win. So hopefully we can pull that one out.
Damn,
we're going to get into what we need to do to win as well as what could go very, very wrong.
Yeah, a lot could.
Today is Wednesday, which means our regular Wednesday segment. What could have been Wednesdays, where we talk about what could have happened. Things turned out a little bit differently.
In the ARLL universe, if you will.
And then we've got our last segment is going to be kind of general Clips talk. We'll be taking questions live from you guys on Twitter.
Yeah.
And we got a couple things, mainly talking about Bomber's recent media blitz.
Oh, yeah. Dude's been everywhere lately.
And some Agua Caliente Clipper stuff. So, yeah, stay tuned for all of that coming up right about now.
So tonight we play the Jazz in Utah. As it stands, we are currently a half game behind the Jazz for the sixth seed. Tonight, other games that you should pay attention to, the Kings play the Bucks,
yeah,
and the Spurs play the Pistons. Two games where, you know, I like the Bucks in that matchup, and with the way the Spurs have been playing, I wouldn't be crazy surprised if the Pistons beat them.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I do like about the Kings as a favorable matchup is they also have a lot of versatile bigs.
Yeah.
So I think that matches up well. And they're deceptively deep. Milwaukee also pretty deep, but I think the Kings, I might give the Kings a slight advantage there, mainly just because everyone on their roster can freaking run the floor off.
Yeah, so if we don't win, we want to root for the Pistons and the Bucks tonight is basically what we're doing. This is pretty interesting. This is the second of three games we have against the Jazz. We obviously lost the first one by 20 points. The third and final matchup is the last game of the season.
Oh, yeah.
And it feels ominous. Like, I don't want the last game of the season to be a tiebreaker with the Jazz for the eighth seed.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, the Jazz have a way easier schedule. That probably won't happen. But it's set up that that could happen.
You think they would slip?
They might. I'm just saying, like, the fact that that game is the last game and with how the season is going, it's just like, it just freaks me out a little bit.
I kind of don't see the Jazz really falling lower than six.
Yeah.
They're just too darn good. They obviously had a really rough start to the season, but very strong team. As you said, last time we got smoked. We still had a very different lineup at that time, so this is going to be a completely different team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how well they'll have been able to game plan for us. You know, we've only played, what, four games together now?
Yeah, something like that. Injuries-wise, we can get into it. I mean, you guys know who's hurt for us. Wilson Chandler and Luke Mbamute, whose knee is, I don't know, full of bugs or something? I don't know what's going on with that guy's
very
knee.
Funny. Like,
and then for the Jazz, Dante Exum, and then Stoney Bologna eating pizza from Tony Bradley. He is out as well. He never really plays. I just wanted to say that. So, yeah, last time we got smoked by 20. That, you know, way different lineup now. The Jazz, oh, I didn't know this about the Jazz being mediocre at home.
Yeah,
that's
so
surprising.
So they have about a 67% winning percentage at home, which is not really great. You want to have that number be at least like 70-75% if you're trying to make a deep playoff push.
Mm-hmm.
And then go at least 500 on the road, obviously. So they've gone 19-10 at home. And we've actually been pretty darn good on the road.
Yeah.
We've stayed above 500 at 17-16.
Right there, baby.
Which is like really surprising just given how hard that schedule has been and how long some of those road stretches were with very little home time in between.
Yeah.
So yeah, it would be, you know, like I wouldn't say the odds are still slightly in their favor in terms of home court advantage,
yeah,
but it's not like,
for sure,
it's not like when you play Denver.
So let's get into what we need to do to win. This kind of goes into the matchups. We're going to talk about this guy a bunch for this next segment. We need to try and bother Gobert somehow.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
definitely.
Last time he had 23-22 with four blocks.
Yeah.
Completely monstrous performance in, like, this was the game that was really frustrating because he was clearly dominating the paint. From,
yes,
like, as soon as the ball slipped, he was dominating the paint. And our guys just kept driving at him. We kept getting shots altered. He kept gobbling up rebounds. That, however, was before we had a little guy named Zubats.
Yes. So it's definitely a very different matchup. You know, Gortat was never going to be a good match against Gobert.
No.
I think another key thing, just piggybacking off the Gobert thing, is not letting him get to the foul line.
Mm-hmm.
We got to be smarter about fouling him.
He crushed last
time. So last time he got to the line 10 times.
God damn.
And it accounted for nearly half of his total points. And just as a point of reference, the entire Clippers team only got to the line 14 times.
Yeah, that's another point we can get into, too. Oh, you want to talk about these zones?
Oh, yeah, totally. So just given like their size, I wonder if it would be effective to maybe just kind of run a zone, essentially, defense against their front court with the guards and wings being a little bit more flexible, but maybe keeping Gallo and Zubats in kind of a zone formation just to protect the paint. We know that Favors isn't really going to shoot that much. He's going to want to drive the lane. He's going to want to be close to the rim, and obviously Gobert is, you know, a rim
Gobert
king.
God damn, he's so good. So going off to the free throw situation, we need to get to the line. Quinn Snyder coached the hell out of the Jazz last time we played.
Yeah.
Like, his adjustments were absolutely fantastic. He prepped very well for our shoot hella free throws strategy. My thing is, should we just try and muck this game up pace-wise from the beginning? Just try and get in there and bang around a bunch?
That's interesting. I don't know. I guess I'm a little bit torn on that. I think defensively, obviously, we got to try to grind out every single possession and not let them get any sort of rhythm going.
For sure.
However, in transition, we are the favorable team. We outscored them. I believe it was 20-5. In the fast break last time we met up.
Yeah. Which is pretty rare for a game where you get beat by 20.
Yeah, that number was 20-5. That was accurate. So I think we got to keep firing from three.
Yeah.
We were able to put up 45 last time and hit him at like around 37% clip.
It was great.
If it's not happening in the paint, which, you know, who knows?
Dude, it's
going to
be
really hard to score on Gobert. He's you know, one of the
maybe the best
defending five in the league. So we got to get a good shooting night. Gallo went kind of cold last time we played them, despite getting actually some pretty good shots, which I'll get into in the matchups a little bit later. But yeah, we got to try and stretch those guys out. And I think a key to this could really be like Gallo and Shea running kind of like a pick and roll or kind of like a drive and kick situation. It kind of gets Favors off of balance. He doesn't really read the pick and roll that well, at least to my eyes. If you're a Jazz fan, you can tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And he was Gallo's worst defender from a percentage wise last time we played. Gallo shot about 75% against him,
Ooh.
Which is surprising because he was the largest defender who was on Gallo.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are things that we can do. Those are things that I don't think are too crazy for us to do to win.
Yeah.
It's all things we know we can do.
I think a big one,
yeah,
though, is just going to be contesting shots well.
For sure.
Last time we were pretty effective at contesting the ball from three when we actually managed to get on the player on the perimeter. So that only happened about 6% of the time they shot from three. But every single one of those times we were able to actually contest a three, it did not go in. So we just got to play all the way out to the arc. And then Gallo actually had a really great defensive game despite not having the offense be there last time. He contested around 7% of the Jazz's total field goal attempts, and he held them to 33%.
That's what's up. His effort has been fantastic this year. We just need everyone to play so well tonight. So let's get into what could go wrong. Turnovers.
Yeah.
That's the thing that always goes wrong for us, seemingly.
Yeah, so last time we actually beat them in turnovers. It was 13-12, so just very narrowly. But it's something that we say every single game, but it's just, you know, it's something that's been so up and down with this lineup.
Another thing that could go wrong, Zubats not being able to handle Gobert.
Yeah.
So if Zubats can't handle Gobert, we're for sure in trouble because no one else on the roster can.
Yeah.
Like, no one else is built to do this. We thought we'd maybe see Boban when he was on the team against him. We didn't really, which is kind of frustrating. But yeah, and if the interior defense is there, which it kind of hasn't been, it's just going to be a long-ass night.
Definitely. Somebody asked about a possible lineup. I believe it was Shea, Shamit, Gallo, Trez, Zoo.
Ooh, I'm into that.
I like the sign. I like the size of that lineup. We'll get into. We have a couple that have been pretty effective last time that in the limited sample group that we have with these guys. So we're gonna get into that in the matchups. But did you have anything else that you think that's really sticks out to you as something that could go wrong?
The goddamn third quarter.
Yeah.
we talked to Doc about it at the last game. He doesn't know what to do in the third quarter, which I respected the openness for the answer.
Yeah.
Where he was like, I don't know. We've tried smart things. We've tried dumb things. We don't know what's going on.
Definitely.
That just can't happen tonight.
Yeah, I think a big part of that is going to be we probably just shouldn't roll out the starting lineup again at the start of the third.
Yep.
Unless it's been really effective. You know, like I think that the time to tinker is in those first couple of halves, and even if we end up at a deficit going into the break, we should have at least nailed down whatever matchups are going to be effective.
Yeah, so we can get into those matchups now, and kind of going off that, not having a rough desperate the break, the starters versus themselves.
Yeah.
It's one of my bigger ones. Like, the Jazz are good enough that it wouldn't be, that frustrating if they can't get a lead to give to the bench. Because
mm-hmm.
Lou and Trez are obviously going to be clutching this game, as they are with every game, even more so tonight. But I just hope we can keep the deficit under 10 if there is one.
For sure.
You know, I don't want the starters to come out and just get smacked super early.
Yeah.
That would not be good, obviously.
And just tying into that, the bench, we just barely outscored them the last time these two teams met. So I think a key matchup to watch is going to be Garrett Temple and Jamichael Green versus Jay Crowder and Kyle Korver. Crowder and Korver killed us last time. Mm-hmm. They were deadly off the bench. They combined for 42-6-4, and we really just didn't have an answer. However, given the length of these guys, Temple obviously, being like forward size,
he's huge,
and Green being a very solid, serviceable defender as well as a 3-point shooter. I like our odds. If these guys can make it happen and lock in, then I think that they could kind of quench this bench a little.
42-6-4 is rough.
Yeah.
And then Patrick Beverley versus Donovan Mitchell. Mitchell had, 28 against us last time?
I believe it was even higher.
It was an effective night for him.
He finished... Oh, yeah, you were right. 28? It was 28, nice. Yeah. So I'm hoping that they put Patrick Beverley on Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
I'd kind of like to see Shea actually be the on-ball defender against Rubio. I think that he makes smart enough calls that he can guard kind of a maestro like Rubio.
Yeah, and he's got length, which kind of can bother Rubio's passing.
Definitely, definitely. So Pat guarded Mitchell for around 25% of his possessions the last time we played, and he held him to 50%, which is not great, but it's fine. Avery Bradley actually defended him the majority of times and held him to a much more reasonable 40%.
He who shall not be named.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah. So I actually think if he can stay away from foul trouble, Garrett Temple is actually kind of a good guy to put on him. If he can keep up speed wise, he's just got so much length.
He played great against Doncic. Like,
yeah, he just got a lot of fouls kind of sure. quick. So that's one thing that I worry about. If any one of our key rotation guys fouls out, this game is over.
Yeah, for sure. This is what I'm just thinking. I just want to see a good breakout game from Shea. This isn't really a matchup, but the dude's been in a slump lately. Some lunatic fans have been really angry about it. Which, you can be bummed he's in a slump. You can't be mad at the guy.
Yeah.
So I hope tonight he can break out, at least offensively, or maybe get a couple steals or something like that. What is your prediction for this game?
I really am unsure how to handicap this one. I'm hoping that we can lay down a more solid defensive effort.
Yeah.
And maybe keep this one to... I'm trying to think of what I think would be reasonable. I'd like for it to be a pretty solid defensive outing, and I would like to say it's going to be somewhere in the realm of 112 to 118, and it could honestly go either way.
Man, you're saying toss up.
I'm saying
you're not picking a side.
I'm saying real toss up
you
on this
coward.
One. I am a coward.
I'm going 111, 108 Clips.
Totally.
Going to be a nail biter. God, I hope they win. 6 o'clock. Tune in. We'll be watching.
Somebody just said these are tough games. I really like the Jazz a lot. Couldn't agree more. They're a great
team.
Squad.
Coming up after this, we are going to be doing a What Could Have Been Wednesday. But first, if you're following multiple Locked On podcasts,
as you should be,
check out Locked On Net on Twitter and Instagram. It's all of the things, aggregated into one account. It's great. On Instagram, you get the longer stories. Again, that is Locked On Net on Twitter and Instagram. So welcome to What Could Have Been Wednesdays.
The Arrow Universe.
Didn't do one last week. We're back for you. This one's got a couple of factors in it. So this is, what if Bill Walton could have stayed healthy when the Clippers were in San Diego?
All right.
It's something that he has talked about multiple times, how sad he is that he wasn't able to be healthy during this time and his hometown lost the team. For frame of reference, he only played 14 games for the Clippers during the 79-80 season before missing all of the next two seasons.
Were seasons still 82 games long then?
I don't know. Let's assume shorter. Following extensive rehab, he played 33 games in 82-83, 55 games in 83-84, and then a career-high 67 in 84-85, but the Clippers had moved to Los Angeles by that time.
Yeah.
Clippers only had one winning season in San Diego that first year. The Chargers took a lot of their audience, which, given how everything else went with the Chargers, is kind of a funny thing. World Be Free was crushing it for the Clippers. He was second in the league in scoring 2 years in a row. He had I think he averaged 31 the second year. He was second in scoring, which is pretty incredible.
Dang.
But then, of course, he was traded. Do the Clippers stay in San Diego if they just have one more winning season?
Oh, really tough to say, but I'm going to still say no on this one.
You think so?
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, yeah, I think they'd maybe have to
I just
get...
don't know, and no offense to any San Diegans out there, I just don't know if there is a big enough fan base to support all the teams that were there at the time.
Oh, that's, yeah, they kind of had a jumble, which was not the biggest city at the time.
And it also kind of, it also a little bit has...
Someone just asked me on the live stream, where's the Clipper hat? No Clipper hat today, all natural, baby.
I also, San Diego kind of strikes me as almost more of a football baseball town.
Yeah, I can see that. It's a shame that Walton didn't get a really good run down there.
Definitely.
I think if Walton could have maybe dragged us to a playoffs or something like that back then, the support would have been big. They also, I think you're right, that coming to a head of the Chargers being new and the NFL popping off a ton, they just didn't have room for it. I'm happy they moved to LA, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
But anytime Bill Walton talks about this, I get so bummed out because he generally is so sad.
Yeah.
It would have been great to see him crush it in the Clippers, red, white, and blue.
Would have been awesome, man. One of the greatest to play.
Yeah, dude. Bill Walton, all Stony Bill. Yeah, let us know in the chat if you guys have any memories of the San Diego Clippers.
For sure.
Also, if the Clippers stay in San Diego, does that mean we would be Lakers fans?
Interesting. I don't have anything against the Lakers. I just, it's not my fan base.
Yeah, I don't think I would be a Lakers fan. I'd probably be a Sonics fan, because I'm assuming, also in this timeline, the Sonics stay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, more small market teams. It would make sense.
More small market teams. It'd be great. Another what could have been. So there's been some hiccups with the Clippers arena situation. What happens if the Clippers arena thing falls through? The lease is up in 2024.
So still got quite a bit of time.
Still got
that.
Quite a bit of time. But what happens? Oh, we got a memory. Oh, nice. Someone just roasted us. Shout out to that 9-year-old who runs that account on Twitter. So if the Clippers arena fails, probably won't happen. My idea, you build a 3,500-seat facility in the middle of Echo Park.
I know that you're
keep
trying to
pop this. Get that
thing popping, dude. Charles's vision for, the best stadium is something that seats less than 5,000 people.
Damn
and it's
straight,
just the
dude.
Loudest home arena
oh
in the world.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine?
And tickets are also $5,000.
No, the top of it's standing room only. So there's no
okay.
seats. It's safe standing like they do in Europe with soccer stadiums.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 8,000 people, it'd be so awesome. Someone just commented, I really like Jermichael Green. He's a dog. Do you think we can sign him? I hope we sign. I mean, after how he's played the past couple games, I hope we do.
If he can keep up this level of play, I don't see any reason why we couldn't. I don't know what the market is going to be like for him this in free agency.
Yeah.
But I think we could definitely lock him down.
It's he's such a jump start. He's kind of in terms of energy, he's almost kind of not diet Trez, but he does a lot of similar things. He hustles for stuff. He's always kind of scrapping for rebounds.
I like the idea more that he is thick Mike Scott.
Thick Mike Scott. That's what, yeah, all right. Yeah, I'm down with that. He's for sure thick Mike Scott. So the Clippers thing, do you think we just re-sign Elise at Staples?
Well, we have a few years to figure it out. Ballmer just... It just seems to be his entire mission statement right now is to get the Clippers their own arena. And, I was not interested in it before. But I just think that he has a really unique idea and vision for it. And honestly, somebody who loves the team this much, like,
it's probably gonna happen.
I gotta think that he would make something that would A, be a great situation for the players, and B, be really great for the fans.
He mentioned that, so he was on Kimmel. We'll talk about it a little more after the break, but they were talking about the stadium. You know, he said the Clippers have third billing, they have the worst nights. You know, they make the least money, which I'm not really sure how that works considering the Kings aren't very good right now. But yeah, he talked about how to be world class, you need a world class facility.
Yeah.
And he wants it for the fans. Like, he wants it for everybody. So I do respect the passion. I love it. I'm just still worried about ticket prices. In my selfish brain,
yeah,
I'm worried about too expensive ticket prices.
Yeah, too expensive ticket prices would be a real bummer, especially because he's going for this whole family-friendly thing. But on the other hand, he is like he's worth like $45 billion and
so much
like
money.
Doesn't really seem to give a crap about spending it for the Clippers.
Yeah, that's true, dude. He is kind of balling out. Coming up after this break, we're going to talk about more about Ballmer on Kimmel. So Ballmer on Kimmel, very animated interview, I thought.
Yeah.
He got up out of his seat a ton. He also commented, he's always a checkered shirt guy.
Oh, yeah. He's always kind of wearing gingham.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I think it fits his vibe. Man, what do you want him to be
wearing?
That's
old school tech guy vibe.
What do you want him to be wearing?
Leather t-shirts like Kevin Hart. I want him to rock the leather button down.
I'd be fine if now that he's retired, he just kind of rocked like classy looking Hawaiian shirts all the time.
Dude, that would be tight. Like
nice
the Clippers
ones?
Yeah, like the Clippers ones.
Yeah.
Also, he had some great sound bites. He said, "We're not selling the team when I'm alive," which I think every Clippers fan can be psyched
on. Oh, yeah.
If you're watching on the live stream, please let us know what you think of Ballmer. I'm assuming you're going to like him.
Somebody did say Ballmer the bomb, so I'm going to take that as a positive.
Take that as a posi. Jimmy Kimmel said that it seems like Steve Ballmer would die of a heart attack if the Clippers won championship. And his response was, "It'd be a good way to go, though." This dude is a lunatic in the best way possible.
In the best, yeah.
Like, he's so crazy. He's like the perfect... He's like if Howard Hughes, like, was in today and a little more well-adjusted.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
This is his Spirit of Chicago, whatever that dumb plane was. He also... I didn't realize this. He has so much say in the music in the arena.
Oh, I did not realize
yeah,
this.
Yeah, like, he picks a bunch of songs in the fourth quarter, like, specifically for the fourth quarter, all this stuff.
Oh, yeah?
He loves Zombie Nation by KenCraft 4000.
Oh, man.
He does a very bad rendition of it on the interview, if you want to check it out. It's very funny. I like your question here, though. Do these kind of appearances help our chances in free agency?
So, yeah, Ballmer obviously has been on a kick lately in the media. He was on KD's thing. He's probably going to end up on LeBron's thing, I would imagine.
Yeah, he's doing the tour right now.
He's doing like, just a tour de force.
That fool is booked.
So I don't know that it helps or hurts our chances in free agency. I think it's kind of net neutral, to be honest. I don't know why, as a player, you would really care about that.
I like someone just pointed out they see his passion. I think it's a net neutral or only a positive.
Yeah, totally. It can't hurt. I think especially if you're a player coming from a place with kind of more iffy management. You know,
which compared to the Clippers is every other... place.
We can't, I mean, obviously it keeps coming up as a big point of contention in the Knicks talks about Dolan still owning the team. Ugh. So when you see somebody like Ballmer, and if those are your two decisions, you know,
yeah.
Like if you're really torn between LA or New York, I just feel like, you know, it does help in the eyes of a free agent. Like it definitely cannot hurt.
Mm-hmm. And if it does hurt, I guess we don't want that guy on the team.
Yeah, like, and I think another positive note is that it's great for the fans. Like, it's, you know, we are the most slept on sports franchise. I think that's a fair statement. And
it's nice to get press that's not a recording of our owner being a horrible racist.
Yeah, definitely. And like, we've been in this new era now for a couple years, and it's really cool that we have like an ownership face as well. Obviously, the front office has been looking so smart and so great lately. And like, I don't know, I feel like we're in a really good spot.
Yeah. 100%. The level of participation and enthusiasm is perfect with Ballmer. So
I
much
agree.
Enthusiasm, very little participation when it comes to personnel, which is exactly how it should be. What else did we want to talk about here? Oh, shout out to the Agua Caliente Clippers.
Yeah.
They're having a mental health awareness night tonight. Awesome. Will and I have both kind of talked about how the NBA has truly just dropped the ball.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying different things, and I think it's going to be different from team to team. Obviously, they're trying to instill that as people are realizing it more and more as a critical part of this game outside of just the physical aspect. I do feel like they were making a really big push there, especially with, you know, DeRozan and Kevin Love coming out. So
and then it just stopped.
Yeah, and
that's
it,
what
it,
was so frustrating.
It definitely kind of lost some momentum. But you know, it's great to see even a G League team doing something like this. And I just piggybacking off of this, I want a big shout out Trez.
Yeah,
because I feel like if you're following him on Twitter, if you're not, definitely give Monster Trez a follow.
Oh yeah, great content.
But he's like really pretty, just forward and honest about stuff like depression and mental illness, and I think it's really, really refreshing, especially in, you know, a league where things like that sometimes are perceived as weakness, I guess, just depending on the player.
For sure, and I mean, I think it was in the off season, Trez had some tweets where people were generally concerned about him.
Yeah,
because he was in a rough place, and like people were showing him love. It was great to see kind of Clipper Nation, whatever, on Twitter get behind it and just rally behind him and show support. So yeah, give Trez a follow as well. Yeah, anything else you want to talk about?
Someone saying Trez, intelligent sweet man.
Very
could
intelligent,
not agree more.
Sweet man. Anything else you want to talk about?
I think that about does it for the pod.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I've been William the Opinion Updike.
I'm Positive Chuck Mockler, and tomorrow we're going to have a hopeful recap of the victory against the Jazz.
Well, we'll have a recap of the hopeful victory.
Yeah,
either way,
sorry.
It's not a hopeful recap.
We're doing
recap.
A recap. We'll be doing Thirsty Thursdays, some more NBA scuttlebutt, and we'll be live streaming again 1:45 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Thanks.